Nityananda Tattva. How the intoxicated Paramahansa, intoxicated by pure love, how Nityananda Prabhu is inseparable from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we spoke about how in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami comprehensively documents how Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. Specifically, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna combined with Srimati Radharani. And Kaviraj Goswami explains very eruditely the total picture of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as well as Sri Nityananda Prabhu. He explains Nityananda Prabhu in terms of all his plenary expansions and portions of plenary expansions, who are involved with maintaining the material world, as well as offering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How these two brothers, Chaitanya and Nitai, relate to each other is a source of unlimited wonder, sweetness, and profound wisdom. We spoke this morning about how Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami received the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. He defended Nityananda Prabhu to his brother, who was bewildered by the activities of Nitai. His brother claimed to be firmly attached to Lord Chaitanya, but he had some problems about Lord Nityananda. So Kaviraj Goswami told him the truth. Look, you better be an atheist. Just don't be attached to any of either Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Nityananda Prabhu. Then try to separate these two. This is a very strong instruction. His brother could not heed that very essential advice. And Kaviraj Goswami describes how his brother fell down from spiritual life. Pleased by Kaviraj Goswami's defense of him, Lord Nityananda appeared in full glory to Kaviraj Das Goswami in a dream. The vivid description that the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita gives of Lord Nityananda surrounded by his cowherd boy associates is so exquisite, it's so detailed. You have full conviction that this is no ordinary dream, and that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is presenting to you the darshan of Sri Nityananda Prabhu, who ordered him, go to Vrindavan, there you will find all possibilities. Everything will happen for you when you go to Vrindavan. So we discussed this morning how immediately Kaviraj Goswami, as soon as he woke up stunned. He immediately left for Vrindavan. So our conclusion that we were discussing in relation to this history of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, is that, as he himself said, everything that happened in Vrindavan. Indeed, his very going to Vrindavan was the mercy of Lord Nityananda. That means the association he found there amongst the Vaishnavas. He credited Lord Nityananda for that. The tutelage, the instruction he received from Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Supdhamadar. This was all the mercy of Lord Nityananda. The presence of the deities he specifically names, Shri Radha Madan Mohan, Shri Radha Govinda. He said, that was all the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And therefore, we can understand that the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita is coming to us by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, because it was Lord Nityananda who sent Kaviraj Goswami to Vrindavan. And there, just as Nityananda Prabhu told him in the dream, everything, all possibilities happened, everything worked in terms of devotional service. Everything works so well that even though from the material point of view, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami is so elderly, his body is breaking down, he's almost blind, he basically can't write, his hands are trembling, he expects to leave his body any moment, yet he is delivering this most exquisite Vaishnava literature. Continuing tonight with the theme of those two brothers, Bhaja Bhaja Bhai Chaitanya Nitai, worshipping those two brothers. We'll discuss more about understanding Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and how they interact together. We will discuss pastimes, which I know you've heard before, but the leelas become fresher and fresher the more we discuss them. Om Jnana Chimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Often, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to intervene when there was some misunderstanding of Nityananda Prabhu. As we spoke this morning, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always trying to rigidly follow the sannyas dharma. He was always presenting, or tried to present to the world, the super pukka following of sannyasi life. That was his preaching platform. People didn't respect him as Nimai Pandit enough that they would get the full benefit from him. Remember when Nimai Pandit was teaching school, his famous Sanskrit class? Everything was explained in terms of Krishna, all the Sanskrit grammatical principles. Yet one day, Mahaprabhu was chanting, Gopi, Gopi, Gopi. And the students, very intellectual, young Brahmana students, they thought, what is this? What kind of mantra is that? They didn't understand that Lord Chaitanya was demonstrating that Krishna is more pleased by approaching him through his devotee than he is by approaching him directly. They didn't understand that. So what was Lord Chaitanya's response? Close down the school. That's it. Institution finished. He thought if he took sannyas, then everyone would offer obeisances to him, and in that way, they would be offering obeisances to the summum bonum, the supreme absolute truth. And in this way, people would benefit. And he would also be able to reach out to the Mayavadi sannyasis and philosophers, because the impersonalists considered sannyas to be so, they considered it to be the ultimate, so much so that they thought, as soon as you take sannyas, you become Narayan. So Narayan decided, all right, I'll take sannyas. The real Narayan will take sannyas, so the phony Narayans will offer their obeisances to be respectful. So Lord Chaitanya tried to very properly and very correctly follow the sannyas dharma. But his followers, they didn't like that. They didn't like to see Lord Chaitanya practicing austerities so severely. So there was always this loving tension between the two, Lord Chaitanya and his associates, after Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. Whereas Nityananda Prabhu, the Avaduta, sometimes would act in such ways that people couldn't understand. And some of them were associates of Lord Chaitanya. And these persons would go to Lord Chaitanya and express their doubts. And Lord Chaitanya would explain to them. But we don't want to make it all one-sided. Nityananda Prabhu had his concerns about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like, what is this sannyas trip? We all know this is Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nityananda Prabhu was concerned that by his rigid following of sannyas, people will think he's an ordinary person. This came to a head on the way to Jagannath Puri. On the way to Jagannath Puri, in fact, as Lord Chaitanya's party near Jagannath Puri, an opportunity came for Nityananda Prabhu to act on his concerns. What I'll try to present to you is a combined version of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat about this Danda incident. Vrindavan Das Thakur describes how Jagadananda usually would carry Lord Chaitanya's Danda. But he wanted to go out and beg alms, and so therefore he entrusted the danda to Nityananda Prabhu, which, depending on your point of view, turned out to be a mistake, or it was a good thing. What happened when Nityananda Prabhu got the danda of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He began to look at it and talk to the danda. Who do you think you are? Don't you understand that I am carrying Mahaprabhu in my heart, yet he is carrying you? What is this? You have become the Lord of my Lord because he's carrying you around? Mm-hmm. He addressed the danda in that way. This is not proper. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is your servant, carrying you, the one we all carry in our heart. Try to understand that as that party of devotees was approaching Jagannath Puri, sometimes Nityananda Prabhu would be off on his own, swimming in the middle of rivers, rolling in the dust, covering his body with dust, dancing so ecstatically that the whole earth would tilt, roaring like a lion, crying, laughing. Now he's got Lord Chaitanya's danda. And after speaking such words of reproach to the danda, instructing the danda, this is not right. What did Lord Nityananda do? He broke the ekadanda, the one danda, into three pieces. Now this is very significant, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasi Thakur gives an intricate explanation. By Lord Nityananda's breaking the ekadanda, the one staff, into three pieces, he's actually changing it into a tridandi. And secondly, by his breaking the one staff into three pieces, he's showing that there's no such thing as pure oneness. Or actually, pure oneness means that all the varieties form one unit. The simultaneous existence of unity and diversity. In other words, Nityananda Prabhu is saying, look, you see oneness in this ekadanda, but actually it contains the tree danda. It contains variety. Break, I'll show you. He made his siddhanta, his conclusion. And he presented the conclusion in that way. He had other concerns too. He had other issues with Lord Chaitanya carrying the danda. So therefore we can indeed see how the two Chaitanya and Nittai worked together. Just as Krishna and Balaram did. We discussed this morning. Balaram sometimes acted as Krishna's servant, sometimes as his guru, sometimes as his friend. The same with Nityananda Prabhu. And the example that comes up so many times in explaining the relationship between Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda is the relationship between Lakshmana and Ramchandra. To give you some way to appreciate how close they are. So another concern that Lord Nityananda had in breaking the danda was that if Lord Chaitanya carries a danda, people will think he's less than a Paramahansa. Because according to the strict sannyas procedures, one carries a danda until the Paramahansa stage. So if everyone's seeing Mahaprabhu carrying a danda, they'll just think, oh, low-level sannyasi. So that was Nityananda Prabhu's concern. We all know the Supreme Personality of Godhead is naturally the Paramahansa, beyond all material taint. He has no need to practice sadhana. He has no need to develop his sannyas. The whole material energy emanates from him, yet he's totally uncompromised by it. Why does he carry a danda? This is causing misunderstanding in the people's mind. So therefore, for all those reasons, Nityananda Prabhu broke the danda in three pieces. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, after he broke it in three pieces, he threw the pieces in the river, blessing the river in that way. Before he did that, he was holding the three pieces of the danda, and Jagannanda comes back. What happened to the danda? Lord Nityananda gave one of his usual answers. The one who carries the danda broke it. Now, what does that mean? Wait a minute. The one who carries the danda is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Nityananda broke the danda. But by answering in that way, Lord Nityananda is showing how close these two are together. So therefore, he said correctly, the one who carries it broke it. Jagannanda didn't know what to say about all this. So then, the two, Jagannanda and Lord Nityananda, approached Lord Chaitanya, who naturally was asking for his danda, and the explanation was given. The danda was broken. Yeah. So Nityananda offered a defense of the situation. He didn't go into a whole philosophical explanation about how Lord Chaitanya has no need to carry a danda. He just simply replied, it's just a piece of bamboo. If you want to chastise me, go ahead. Why are we getting so upset about a piece of bamboo? To which Lord Chaitanya replied, how can you talk like that about the danda? The danda is the residence of all the demigods. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that this danda is my only possession. You all have done very nicely bringing me to Puri, but the only thing I have in life, my danda, is now gone. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu answered in that way because the carrying the danda was his preaching technique. The sentiments of the people at that time were that they respected anyone who carried the danda, thinking this is a nice sannyasi. So that's how Lord Chaitanya was reaching the people. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur points out, there could be some misunderstanding, because it's not simply that people would respect Lord Chaitanya. They could also think he's a nice ordinary person who took sannyas, coming up through the ranks of the sadhakas. So that was Nityananda Prabhu's concern. So my point is that sometimes Lord Chaitanya would have to explain the unpredictable, inconceivable behavior of Nityananda Avaduta, but Nityananda also had his concerns about Lord Chaitanya's very rigidly following sannyas. So you know the result of this situation. Lord Chaitanya said, all right, that's it. I'm going alone to Puri. I'll either walk behind all of you, or I'll walk ahead. Take your pick. And so the devotee said, please, please, you walk ahead. This is a very key incident in Chaitanya Lila. And in both Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, this Lila of breaking the danda is explained as being very deep and with grave significance. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was making his statement, Nityananda Prabhu was making his statement. Now, how is the situation resolved? Vrindavan Das Thakur points out that actually Here is the situation. No one can understand the mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, Lord Chaitanya broke the danda through Nityananda Prabhu, and then later became angry at Nityananda Prabhu. How do you understand all that? This is how close the two brothers are. We'll get further insight into this when Lord Chaitanya has a confidential discussion with Raghava Pandit in Panihati. And it's very important that Lord Chaitanya pulls aside Raghava Pandit and discusses with him, because later Nityananda Prabhu and his entourage are going to come there. So Lord Chaitanya, in private, in confidence, begins to explain something in Panihati to Raghava Pandit. He explained that Lord Nityananda and I, we two persons are actually one. That's how close we are. Lord Nityananda tells me what to do. All my activities are conducted through Lord Nityananda. These were the confidential truths that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Raghava Pandit, the confidential truths about the relationship between Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Later, in Puri, Lord Chaitanya was speaking to Nityananda Prabhu in private. And he said, I have a job for you that's specially meant for you. I would not want you to come to Puri. I want to send you to Bengal and there deliver everyone. Only you can carry out this mass deliverance of the conditioned souls in Bengal. Only you can do this service on such a extraordinarily huge level. Nityananda Prabhu replied, again showing the closeness of the two, just like Krishna and Balaram, Lakshman, Ramchandra. Nityananda replied, I am the body, you are the life. You are the life of this body. Although the two are so close, the life is more important than the body. I will do whatever you say. You are the life, I am the body. Now, what was this impossible task that Lord Chaitanya had in mind? Lord Chaitanya said to Nityananda Prabhu that if you don't reveal all the knowledge that you have, if you don't deliver Krishna Bhakti, it's like you've taken Monavrata. You're a Muni with a vow of silence. And of course, that's not wanted. So please, no need for you to come to Puri. Do this task that even I can't do. You may, if you've read Chaitanya Charitamrita, know that Srila Prabhupada gives an extraordinary purport at this point, explaining the power of parampara, that by the power of disciplic succession, a devotee can do tasks, execute tasks, even more than the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. This is how powerful parampara is. So Lord Chaitanya is making that point. Although he's Mahaprabhu, he's saying to Nityananda Prabhu, you can do things that even I can't do. And of course, Nityananda, as we said, clarified the situation. Yes, we are so close. One of us is the body, the other is the life, but the life is more important. And that way he's declaring his eternal servitorship to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, what did Lord Chaitanya have in mind in speaking these things to Nityananda Prabhu in private? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives an interesting explanation. He said that in Navadvip, Lord Chaitanya had already delivered all the aristocrats, the educated pundits, the sophisticated persons, the cream of Navadvip. You may recall what Navadvip was like before the appearance of Sri Gaurahari. It was a seat of Vedic learning. The greatest pundits in India came from Navadvip. They were masters of logic. They were masters of everything Vedic except Krishna Bhakti. They knew nothing about the conclusion of the Vedas, but they were masters of everything else. In other words, they were the masters of the husk of the rice, but what was inside the husk, that was totally missing. And this is what drove Advaita Acharya to such despair. Everywhere I look, people are performing pious activities or impious activities. But there's not a trace of bhakti. The situation is so bleak that only the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can save the day. So that was Navadvip. Navadvip was drowning in Vedic rituals and quasi-Vedic rituals and studies of logic, metaphysical arguing, but no Krishna Bhakti. Now, as Lord Chaitanya is based in Puri, he gives another analysis. He had already delivered the cream of Navadvip, the best persons in terms of scholarship, in terms of education, erudition. But Mahaprabhu wasn't satisfied. He told Nityananda Prabhu, what about the fools, the masses, the lowest of the lows? What about them? This is the service for you. How to deliver the ordinary people, the laborers, the merchants, the fools. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to point out, in the category of fools includes Mayavadi philosophers. So, in this way, Nityananda Prabhu immediately left Navadvip with his associates, taking up that order of Lord Chaitanya. Now, on their way, strange things happen. Nityananda Prabhu decided he was going to plunge all of his associates in ecstatic prema. So his associates started demonstrating various behaviors of Goloka Vrindavan as cowherd boys, or in the mood of Srimati Radharani, asking, how can I sell the milk? Some of his associates would, in the mood of a cowherd boy, stand for hours in threefold bending dance. It's just like Nityananda Prabhu turned the switch and everyone just went totally out of any kind of external consciousness. So in this way, they're on their way to Bengal. And they were so intoxicated with love of Krishna, that they didn't know where they were going. They didn't know where their main road was. They kept getting lost and then asking people, where's the way to the Ganga? And the people would say, Ganga? That's 10 miles that way. And Nityananda Prabhu and his associates would just laugh, and then they would go marching off in the wrong direction. And again, they would approach someone. Where's the Ganga? Again, the same thing. It's 20 miles over there. Lord Nityananda and his associates were not paying attention to anything we would consider normal. They were floating in the ecstasy of Krishna praying. They felt no hunger, thirst. As we said, it was like Nityananda Prabhu just turned a switch and everyone lost all external consciousness, all his associates. So they arrived at Panihati. And as we pointed out before, it was very good that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had pulled Raghava Pandit aside and told him the truth of the relationship between Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Because there in Panihati, Lord Nityananda just fully displayed his ecstasies of pure love. He sat on the altar. He received the worship of all the devotees. They had non-stop kirtan. So much that no one ate for 3 months. It's just Nityananda just had them on that level. He had just taken them out of external consciousness, out of the external world. And all they did was chant and dance and talk about Krishna for 3 months straight. No eating. While there, while all this was going on, Nityananda Prabhu suddenly said, where are the Kadamba flowers? Everyone knows I live in a forest of Kadamba flowers. Of course, he's talking about Goloka Vrindavan, Balaram. He asked Raghava Pandit, can you please bring some Kadamba flowers? Raghava Pandit replied, this is not the season for Kadamba flowers. Wrong time of the year. Nityananda Prabhu said, oh, is that so? I suggest you go home and you may find some Kadamba flowers there. So Raghava Pandit dutifully went to his house and he looked out the window and he saw a lime tree that was sprouting Kadamba flowers. So he brought the Kadamba flowers back to Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Month after month, this ecstasy in hearing and chanting about Krishna went on. Then, as the ecstasy intensified, his associates, Nityananda Prabhu's associates, just started running around in the forest. They would climb tree branches and walk out just on the leaves. Or they would cry out the holy name with ecstasy and uproot trees from the roots, just pull out the trees. Or they would climb to a top of a tree, a tall tree, and jump down to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
This is how Lord Nityananda just, as we said, turned the switch and just took his associates totally out of external consciousness. So then, Nityananda Prabhu decided he wants to make a tour of the villages around on both sides of the Ganga. And he felt the best way to make the tour was to be totally outfitted with jewels. Suddenly, jewels appeared, ornaments appeared from all directions. Gold and silver ornaments. Everywhere he could, Lord Nityananda was wearing some kind of gold or silver jewelry. On every finger of his hand, he put on the finest silks. And then he went on his preaching tour. So you might say, well, why did he do that? Well, what was his angle? Well, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had his preaching techniques of taking sannyas and getting people to respect him in that way, Nityananda Prabhu thought, there's people out there who need to be delivered who are attracted to opulence. Therefore, I'll wear the finest silks, cover myself with jewels, and they'll be attracted. One brother, Chaitanya, has his preaching methods. The other brother, Nityananda, has his preaching methods. So indeed, he went on tour like that. And plunged all the villages in ecstatic love of Krishna. Even the children went mad with ecstasy. And sometimes Lord Nityananda would feed them himself. Sometimes he would bind up the children, sometimes beat them, and they would just scream in ecstasy. And the children, just like the men we talked about before, the children would start running out into the forest and uprooting trees. Now let's go to another Leela, a very famous Leela, in which Haridas Thakur is the main character. You all know how Haridas Thakur was tempted by a prostitute sent by an envious person. Was it Ramachandra Khan or Ramananda Khan? Ramachandra Khan, yes. So you know how that turned out. Haridas Thakur delivered the prostitute. But still, there's the situation about Ramachandra Khan. What happened to him? So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes how the seed, the bija of the aparad, the offense to Haridas Thakur, grew into a tree which later bore fruit. And how was the fruit of the offense tree going to manifest? Nityananda Prabhu was going to take care of it. Now bear in mind that just as Krishna has his mission of two departments, to enliven the devotees and defeat the agnostics and atheists, so does Lord Nityananda. So that's another side of Nityananda Prabhu. Yes, Nityananda was so compassionate when Lord Chaitanya was about to kill Jagaya Madai with his chakra. Lord Nityananda intervened. But also Lord Nityananda can display anger at offenses to devotees. So Ramachandra Khan had a very nice mansion in the traditional style. The women living in the inside, and then there's an external house for doing business, receiving guests. And that external house had the Durga Mandapa, sacred worship area for Durga Devi. In this way, Ramachandra Khan could show that he was a respectable gentleman. He simply had tried to entrap Haridas Thakur with a prostitute, but otherwise he was a nice He was a nice Hindu gentleman with the required Durga Mandapa for worshiping the gods. So along comes Nityananda Prabhu with a huge mass of followers. And Nityananda Prabhu just walks in to this sacred demigod worship area and sits himself down with all his followers. Uninvited, of course. Ramachandra Khan won't even show his face. He sends his servant to talk to Nityananda Prabhu. And he sends his servant with a very sarcastic message, a message indirectly telling Lord Nityananda, kindly exit, get out of here. The servant relays the message. Wouldn't it be better for you to be at the house of an ordinary man? In other words, you're at the house of a very important, dignified, respectful man. Very respectful, right? He simply tried to drag Haridas Thakur down by hiring a prostitute, but otherwise very respectful. Dignified. So the servant of Ramachandra Khan presented that message. There are houses of ordinary persons available for you. Why don't you go there? And then he suggested, the servant suggested, how about the house of a cowherd man? They always have adequate milk sheds where you could stay. He's speaking like this to Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda's response was instant. It's true. This place is not fit for me. He laughed and showed anger at the same time, letting you know his anger is nothing material. You're right. What am I doing here? Actually, this place is just good for cow killers and meat eaters. And he left immediately. Lord Nityananda, in anger, left immediately. He had given the hint, there's going to be something awful that's going to happen here. And indeed, that is what transpired. Ramachandra Khan was a businessman, but he got into income tax problems with the government. So the Mohammedan tax collector came to administer justice. He marched right into the Durga Mandapa, and for 3 days, he killed a cow and ate the flesh, cooking it right there in the sacred demigod worship area. And then he arrested Ramachandra Khan, arrested his wife, arrested his children, and plundered the whole village. In this way, the whole village became deserted. So that is another side of Nityananda Prabhu responding to the offense perpetrated on such a glorious devotee, Haridas Thakur. So we have discussed Lord Nityananda's being dispatched to Bengal. And remember, Lord Chaitanya told him, there's no need for you to come to Puri. Just stay in Bengal. Of course, Nityananda Prabhu couldn't really follow that. And he would come to Puri and visit Lord Chaitanya. Meanwhile, he was absorbed in his mission of delivering all the people in Bengal. A task that Lord Chaitanya said he himself couldn't do. And therefore he was sending someone with more power. When we look at the situation of the world today, we shouldn't become lulled into complacency by all the so-called technological advancement, all the technological complication, urban complications. Right now, for the first time in known human history, more than 50% of the human population lives in cities. And by the middle of this century, 70% or more of the human population will live in cities. So we can easily tend to think that life has become urbanized, and an urbanized life means a more advanced life. When actually, the depths of ignorance, are rapidly increasing. Unless we train our intelligence to actually perceive what's going on around us, we may become lulled into complacency, thinking, oh, things are getting nicer, things are getting better for some people, if not for all. You may look at your own situation and see, oh, materially, I'm making progress, education is going on, jobs are going on, money is being made. And we may not be able to perceive the depths of ignorance. And it's that depth of ignorance that so moves the heart of the followers of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. How can people live like this? This is why when you hear Srila Prabhupada lecture, there's such an intensity, there's such a power of spiritual concern, because he saw that human life is not being lived properly. The greatest opportunity given by nature to have a human body, that opportunity is being totally trashed on a mass scale. We cannot see these things with our ordinary vision. Our vision has to be trained by the Shastra, by hearing through parampara, and then we're able to see, this is not right. This is not the standard. This is not any situation for complacency. There can never be any lasting peace and stability in such a depth of ignorance. Last time I was here in India, it was in India. I was discussing with your Rasamrita Sindhu Swami. And I was telling him, I'm reading in various publications meant for those who have a world view that because of the lack of economic progress amongst the lower class in India, at any moment a demagogue could stir up the masses to revolt, to cause governmental chaos. Because although someone is living in just the most wrecked kind of little hut, they have a TV. And on the TV they're seeing, what are they seeing? All this opulence. Or they go to the movies, they see all this opulence. But most of the people are not getting that. So according to conventional commentaries by social analysts, this is a very dangerous situation. Whenever there is a huge inequality of wealth, watch out. This is a subject they're talking about in the USA all the time. Because the top 1% in the USA has like 50% of the wealth. So people are walking around with signs saying, I am the 99%, remember me? So the traditional or mainstream presentation of the social reality is that because so many people in India have been left out of progress, have been left out of getting all the consumerism, they're going to cause trouble. But actually, the way the material world works is someone gives a commentary, it becomes very popular as social analysis, And then someone with more credentials refutes that and comes out with another commentary. There's no absolute knowledge on the relative plane. So now suddenly a more erudite conclusion has come out that based on very in-depth studies, it's been ascertained that the real commotion in such volatile social situations is not caused by the lower classes. It's caused by the newly created middle class. Very interesting. The new middle class, with all its new acquisitions of consumer goods and new social status, when they see that they're losing it, they are the ones who just go mad and tear everything down. Very interesting. Because they got a taste of the luxuries, the conveniences. But then they're losing it. Economic life is becoming harder and harder. It's more difficult for people to make ends meet, whether they're low class or middle class. And so it's the middle class that actually causes the riots, just like in the Arab world. That's not the low class people. It's the middle class. We're losing our consumer goods. We're losing our newly acquired prestige. The psychology is actually given by Krishna to the gopis in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Krishna was explaining why he left his dearmost devotees, disappeared. He said, don't think that I was away from you. From a hidden place, I was actually watching you, observing your ecstasies in separation. Don't accuse me of being hard-hearted, in other words. Why did I leave you? I know the psychology. And then Krishna gave the reason. If someone's been poor all their life and they get some wealth, and then they lose that wealth, they never stop thinking about it. Similarly, in other words, you achieved me and then you lost me. And in this way, through feelings of separation, you're totally absorbed in thinking about me. Very appropriate example. Because as we were discussing, in terms of the material situation of the world, the material situation of India, very volatile, very potentially explosive. Yet at the same time, by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, so much access to Krishna Bhakti is being provided. With all our resources, with all our expertise, with all our learning, it is our duty to understand the situation and do everything we can to rectify the ignorance that is enshrouding the whole world. Remembering that urgency of which Lord Chaitanya communicated to Lord Nityananda. You can do something I can't do. Shripad, holy man, I have a job for you. And we should also feel that we have a job through parampara. Our mission, our service is coming through guru parampara. And by the power of parampara, a devotee can do even more than what Vishnu does. So that was the striking purport that Srila Prabhupada wrote. Krishna likes to see that his devotee gets all the credit. So Nityananda Prabhu demonstrated his taking up the order from Lord Chaitanya and delivering persons whom Lord Chaitanya said he can't reach. Lord Chaitanya was saying, I can't reach those lowest of lows. But my mission is to distribute Krishna Bhakti without discrimination. And I am going to do that, but I'm going to do it through you. And remember how Lord Nityananda responded. I am the body, you are the life. The two are inseparable, but of the two, the life is more important. I am your eternal servant, in other words. Even though I am a Prabhu, I am Vishnu Tattva, you're Vishnu Tattva, still you are Mahaprabhu. The greatest privilege is to have a ringside seat on the witnessing the expansion of Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That is the greatest privilege. In his last year with us, Srila Prabhupada stated very definitively that there will come a time when people will look back upon Srila Prabhupada's days on the earth as the time that changed the history of the whole world. They'll look back on those times as the seed from which a tree sprouted that changed the course of the whole world. So we don't know the full extent of what we're doing. Srila Prabhupada explained that history will record how the whole world was saved from the greatest calamity. With our ordinary vision, we may not be able to see that now. Just like with ordinary vision, who can understand what Lord Nityananda does? Who can understand what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does? Their activities are very grave. Lord Chaitanya explained this to Sanatana Goswami when Sanatana Goswami presented himself to him after escaping from jail. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to him, Krishna is in the heart and his activities are very grave. In other words, they're not easy to understand. He has saved you from the greatest calamity. Lord Nityananda's appearance day is that day when we can think of all the excuses why we can't make spiritual advancement. And it's a good day to do a certain exercise. I might have said it here before. You get out a pen and paper, and you list all the reasons why you can't chant Hare Krishna, why you can't do devotional service, so why you can't do this, why you can't do that, why it's difficult to execute bhakti amidst the pressures of urban life, which you all know are there, the pressures of working life, the pressures of family life. These are all genuine reasons. So we want to offer those reasons all respect. They are correct. This is Kali Yuga. We want to acknowledge those reasons. We don't want anyone to feel that your reasons for not being able to fully practice bhakti as you might aspire to, we don't want you to feel that your reasons are being dismissed. But then again, they are being dismissed today. Why is that? Because of Lord Nityananda, after you write on the paper all your excuses, which are very good, worshipable, honorable, you can take the paper, crumple it up, and that is the effect of Lord Nityananda, the possibilities that Lord Nityananda's mercy contains. Otherwise, without Lord Nityananda, all your excuses would be true. But because Lord Nityananda is fact. Nitai Padakamala Koti Chandra Shushita. Because of the truth, the factual truth of Lord Nityananda's mercy, you can discard all your excuses, which otherwise would be very significant. So that is how special this day is. By receiving the mercy of Lord Nityananda, you can deepen your acquisition of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. The combination of the two, Chaitanya Nitai, totally eradicate, totally erase all of our excuses, all of our rationalizations. That is the very special significance of this day. We can liberate ourselves from all the excuses. And I know that you have some good ones. As I said, we honor them. We know material life in this world is a struggle. Only a fool would not acknowledge the struggle of the material existence. Yet, in spite of how intense the struggles are becoming, economic situations are deteriorating. Who knows which way the economy will go? Environmental concerns are mounting. Maybe 15 years ago, who cared about environmentalism here, right? Now all of a sudden everyone's realizing we do breathe air. We do drink water. And the food we eat is supposed to be healthy. Suddenly, this is all dawning upon us, these realizations. There's one devotee. I know he's from Calcutta. I might have told you before about him. He went to New Zealand to study environmentalism because 15 years ago, who cared about it in India? So, but he was very concerned, so he said, well, I've got to go overseas, you know, if I want to actually get a solid, erudite education in environmental science. But he was, it's a good story to tell on Lord Nityananda's appearance day. Like so many Indian students that we meet overseas, he had no intention of going over there to find Krishna. He had everything else on his mind. Now it's time to explore the wider world. Now it's time to be open to new ways of thinking, new ways of behaving. So somehow or other, when he was living in Calcutta, he thought that his fascination was for Buddhism, especially Korean Buddhism. You know how you're young, your mind just seizes on something you think is cool, something that is, you know, oh, this is really different. Yeah, that's me. That's what I'd like to be. So, yeah, he was just, I, you know, 20 years old. He thought, wow, Korean Buddhism, that's it. Yeah. Very unusual, very exotic. That's me. What a profile. I can walk around Calcutta. I'm into Korean Buddhism. Not Indian Buddhism, but Korean Buddhism. Sounds very, he thought it sounded very impressive, you know. Very distinctive. So, like young people do, he built up this fixation in his mind. Korean Buddhism. He started studying it, and okay, I'm going overseas to New Zealand. There, I'm sure I can further my life's pursuit of Korean Buddhism while studying environmental science. So, he was on the street in the capital city, Wellington, and there was one of the few Korean devotees in the world. Basically, we have, I think there are probably less than 5 Korean devotees in the world. So he happened to meet one of them on the street. So she stopped him and put a Bhagavad Gita in his hand. And his reaction was like, well, what is this, Bhagavad Gita? I mean, I'm from India. We all know Krishna. Why are you giving me this book? You know, my grandmother's already told me everything about Krishna. I know all the stories from Mahabharata. Please, please. But he said, where are you from? He said, are you Chinese or are you Japanese? Or I'm Korean. You're Korean! Oh! This is wonderful. You know, I'm so interested. My life's goal is Korean Buddhism. So she said, Korean Buddhism? Well, I'm Korean, but I am a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda. And he said, oh my goodness. Well, I finally meet someone from Korea. And it's a nice girl, too. And but she said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda. That Bengali stuff I thought I left behind. That stuff my grandmother used to talk about. So he was so overwhelmed. I finally meet a Korean person. And she's a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda. I can't believe it. All right, he said, all right, where's your center? I'm coming. So he came to the center and to the outreach center. It's called Bhakti Lounge. And now for years he's been one of the prominent preachers, preaching Krishna Bhakti through environmental science. So 15 years ago, no one wanted to hear anything about that in India. Now he's in big demand. Please, please, come back to India. We realize we have to breathe clean air. We have to drink clean water. Recently, the government of China came to a startling admission, a startling conclusion. They realized, and they made a public statement, we have totally polluted all our soil. And that means that we have totally polluted all our food. And that means we've totally polluted all our citizens. They just figured that out. Just now figured it out. It was a very esoteric, mystical truth. Polluted soil, what does that produce? Well, food comes from the soil. If the soil's polluted, the food must be polluted. Oh. This is the mentality of Kali Yuga, you see? And if human beings eat polluted food that comes from polluted soil, the human beings are going to be very sick. Oh. This is the dense darkness of ignorance. And it's going on all levels. I think I spoke to you before, last time I was here, about one particular country in the first world, New Zealand. It's ranked by the UN as being number one in environmental consciousness in the world and number one in female power. Mm-hmm. So, I spoke to you about how no one bothers to get married there anymore. There's another devotee, he's from Calcutta, and he married a British devotee. So they went to before their yajna, their fire yajna, they wanted a legal marriage, of course. So they went to the official city office of birth and marriage certificates. And they went up to the receptionist and said, we're here to get a legal marriage. We know that we're probably going to have to wait 3 weeks, the waiting list, you know. It's normal. That's okay. We're prepared to do that. We just like to arrange a date now. And the whole office full of ladies behind their desks burst out laughing. And so the devotee from Calcutta said, I don't understand. Why are you all laughing? You know, we're just here to register for a marriage. And again, the whole office was just laughing. please, miss, can you please explain? She said, don't you know? No one gets married anymore. No one comes here to get married. He said, isn't this the office of birth and marriage certificates? She said, yes, but no one comes to get married anymore. You want to go on the list? You can get married right now. There's no waiting list. But one devotee in Delhi was telling me how the universities in New Zealand are coming to India and having programs, presentations in five-star hotels, you know, attracting all the students, come study at university in New Zealand. It's a little tough for you in Australia right now. The permanent residency laws have changed a bit, but now you all come to New Zealand. It's become the latest rage that Delhi devotees were telling me. Yes, go study in New Zealand. It'll be different than other places. But this is the so-called culture that you'll find. That's just one representative place, one grain of rice out of the pot. But it gives you an idea of the ignorance that's covering the world. So anyway, in this same country, so rated by the UN as being the topmost progressive country, they just totally did away with any legal terminology referring to divorce. Legally, there is no such thing as divorce. And that way they solve the divorce problem. How can there be a divorce problem when there's no such thing as divorce? All you do is separate from your spouse for 1 year and the marriage is considered dissolved. You don't have to give any reason. You don't have to go to court. Nothing. It's like in the UK, you still have to show cause. There's a stock cliche that is given when you want a divorce. Irreconcilable differences. No matter what the situation, everyone just, you know, they go for that one. You know, that's what they present. Matt, we want a divorce, irreconcilable differences. We can't mend these differences, that's it. But now in the most progressive country, rated by the UN as the most progressive, no such thing as divorce. Solves all the problems, doesn't it? Solves all the human relationship problems. You don't like who you're with? Just move out for 1 year. Finished. No cause needed to be shown. No intricacies. Nothing. This is what humanity is coming to. I was speaking where in Australia last week in Sydney, and I was explaining the statistics for the USA. Because what you do as a preacher, as a devotee preaching, you never talk directly about the country that you're in. You always talk about another country. So when you're in India, you talk about China. When you're in Australia, you talk about the USA. That way, you know, because people are attached to the land of their birth, so you tread very carefully. So I was explaining in Australia how the statistics for divorce in the USA. And there, people still get married, so they have a need for divorce statistics. Although the marriage rate is declining. In the USA, polls show that 90% of the people say they believe in God, and 50% of the people say they accept a literal reading of Genesis, that God created the world in 7 days, 6 days, and then he had to rest and like that. So externally, it's a very religious country. So therefore, they still marry, although the marriage rate is dropping. So the divorce rate is 55% for the first marriage. For the second marriage, it's 65%. For the third marriage, it's 75%. In other words, you can't win. Each time you try again, the situation becomes worse and worse and worse. On the one hand, it's funny. On the other hand, it's very sad that people cannot anymore have even the basics of a material society. So in this dense darkness of ignorance, in which even the basic human values are disappearing, this situation gives a chance for the devotees of Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, to increase their service. We see opportunities for even greater service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The ignorance, the degradation, of course, is disgusting and it's unfortunate, but it's a greater service opportunity. So if we see it in that way, how we have a chance to render dear service to the parampara because of the ever-increasing ignorance around us, then we beg for the mercy of Lord Nityananda to be his servants. And this day we can especially beg Lord Nityananda that we can humbly assist in this great effort of the Guru Parampara. That will be the success of our life. So what do you usually do now? Arti and Kirtan. So I thank you all for your kind attention. Let us beg for the mercy of Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, those two inseparable brothers. They're so close. Sometimes you can't distinguish one from the other. They think together. The thoughts of one are actually the thoughts of the other. Let us hold them close to our hearts, embed them in our consciousness, and in that way, we're sure to be successful in the real goal of the human form of life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Arti? Gorati?